Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to a bonus edition of Spin the Rally Pod. It's a bonus not just because it's our second spin of the week, but also because you can watch it as well as listen to it. But the real bonus is in the content. Here at Dirtfish, we're partnering with this week's Central Machine Hire Otago Rally in Dunedin, New Zealand. The opening round of the New Zealand Rally Championship and undoubtedly one of the most special events in the world. Competing in New Zealand is something that sits on pretty much every rally driver's bucket list. Certainly that's the case for Chris Meek and Brandon Semenuk. We've got the 5-time World Rally winner and 2-time American champion together to talk cars, bikes, Guinness, and what makes the hairs stand up on Chris Meek's hand. Watch it, listen to it, enjoy it. What a pleasure it is to be back in Dunedin, in Otago, for the Otago Classic Rally. This event has so many names. It's the International, International Four-Wheel Drive, International Classic. It doesn't matter. These boys are here for one reason only. Chris Meek, Brandon Semenuk. Great to see you boys here. You've been here, tell us, how long have you been here, Chris?
48 hours now? I've probably slept 3 of them. Yeah, a bit upside down with the jet lag. Now I feel what Hayden Padden felt like coming to every WRC rally. I can understand it, but it is about as far away as you can get from Europe. But I've enjoyed it so far. We managed to get out on a test this morning. I had a drive in the car and really
enjoyed it. Thoughts on the car? I mean, what is the car like?
Honestly, it was really enjoyable. As you know, I've done a little bit of marked escort over the last 6 to 8 months when we went to do the RAC. That didn't last as long as I would have liked with some engine trouble, but I've tested other escorts since. And it was a nice call to get to come here to Otago. There's been some rallying royalty in that car over the years. With Vatanen, Kankinen, Waldegard.
Mouton, McRae's.
Oriel, McRae's. Mikko Hirvonen, Mats Otsberg. Delighted to get the call and was intrigued to see what the car was like and was really impressed this morning. And honestly, okay, here the regulations are a bit different. You're allowed power-assisted steering, which in an escort makes a big difference. Plus, they're a bit more open on the suspension. You can have a bit different dampers, a bit meatier dampers, a bit more oil in them. So it felt really, really good this morning. I enjoyed it. So let's see.
Brandon, you've been here a little bit longer.
Yeah, we came in a bit early. Me and Keaton went into Queenstown, which is kind of a main stopping point in New Zealand for me. Like, obviously, the mountain bike scene there is really big, and I got a lot of friends in that area. So we got there Friday, and I got to hang out and ride for 3-4 days and catch up with some people I don't get to see very often. Obviously, last time I've been in New Zealand is, 4 years ago, pre-COVID. Yeah, it was great to stop in, and I'm doing probably a little better than Chris, feeling well acclimated at this point. And it's nice to be in Dunedin. We've actually done some mountain biking and some filming here as well, so I'm familiar with the area and this rally. But to actually be here competing at the rally is cool. It's finally be here.
How is the time difference for you? Because for us, you're in Andorra now.
I'm in Andorra, so Central European time. I think it's 10 hours. Yeah. 10 hours difference.
11 for me.
Savage. For me, it's 4 hours.
Oh, really? A walk in the park.
We were here during time change, so it might be 5 or 3. I can't remember which way we've gone. But it's 4 hours. So I'm maybe waking up a bit earlier than I normally do and going to bed a bit earlier. But it's it was so easy to adjust.
Yeah. And the car, did you get a run in your car? You're in the Subaru Impreza, the H6. Explain a little bit about the car and what it was like.
Yeah, I didn't know too much about the car before we got here. I kind of understood what the build was. It's kind of like a Group N concept. But with this H6 engine, naturally aspirated V6, I've never got to experience. So that was definitely really unique and cool to drive. It's different than I thought. Like it does have like a little bit of low end power because of the power is always there, naturally aspirated, but it was kind of like, it also had like a peakiness to it. If you'd like, you revved it way higher than I thought you would. Naturally, I thought you would be kind of one of those torquey lower rev engines. But yeah, it was a cool car. It definitely takes me back to my early beginnings of just, raw, older Subaru chassis, Group N spec, just, minimal adjustment suspension. And it's like, there's nothing crazy about the car, but it's so simple that it's just like, all you do is get in and drive the thing. Like, you don't need to think about much.
Your car, the question I wanted to ask, there is the names that we've talked about. Does it bring a bit more kind of pressure that, that everybody's been in it?
Yeah. I feel a bit strange being in that company of the Kankanens and the Voldegards and stuff. But yeah, just honestly, just to get the chance to drive the cars is nice. And, the hospitality here is incredible. But it's the roads that drew me here. I never got the chance to do Rally New Zealand as a round of the World Championship. I was never in the series. It stopped in 2012, I think. And I come on the scene with Citroën in late 2013. And then I finished in 2019 and I'd arrived back in 2021. So I missed the opportunity to drive here. Even though the roads in the north, I think, are a little bit more technical than in the south, here in Otago, from what I'm told, it's very, very fast and high speed, but still got that lovely undulating terrain. I'm really looking forward to it. And that's what really drew me here. It was always my bucket list to drive a rally car in New Zealand. So yeah. What better than a Mark II?
Absolutely. But you haven't been UA 21 years ago.
I think it was 2003. It was the first event for the 03 Focus. And I was working at M Sport at that time as an engineer. And I had a handout with Christian Loriot designing that car. And I didn't have much design input. I was a CAD jockey on the 3D CAD system. That was a big project and probably the first major project I was involved in as an engineer back then. So I was really intrigued to see how the car, there was a big anticipation at that time to see, because Loeb was dominating in the Zara. And so myself, Glenn Patterson, and my brother flew out and we watched Rally New Zealand and then came down to the South Island for a week's holiday after it. But I remember we're even standing at the junction where Marco Martin was leading the rally. The car was amazing. It retired about a kilometre up the road from a junction we're standing at with an engine failure.
Yeah.
We ran up the road to where he stopped and stuff. But yeah, I remember that. So that was my only experience in New Zealand. At that time, as we starting out doing rallies at that time, and we did do the recce, not the recce as such. We drove all the stages up in the North Island. But yeah, really intrigued to see what the roads are like down here. But I know it will be amazing. It's just, on a scale of 1 to 10, how amazing?
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, Colin and I have been down last year. Cole's been a couple of years more, but it is. And like you said, hospitality is great. It's a beautiful part of the world. But also, what kind of intrigues me is you two. You hadn't met before, but you're both absolute megastars in your own worlds, and you perhaps in two worlds. But what's it like? I remember back in the day when McRae met Travis and Ken for the first time, and it was just a kind of an immediate kind of bond, because you are different to the rest of us in the stuff that you do. What's it like to sort of meet each other? You met for the first time this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if Chris was familiar with me, but I was very familiar with Chris and his driving, and I big fan over the years. The more and more that I come to new places and experience more motorsport and groups and cultures within it, the more I see like this mountain bike and motorsports like clash, like it just seems to kind of go hand in hand. Like a lot of motorsport drivers ride mountain bikes or road ride or whatnot, and then mountain bikers are very like rally is like that's mountain biking on steroids. So there's just this kind of weird crossover. Even though like the worlds are so separate, but I feel like there's that common connection between the two and respect, obviously.
I've seen it before. I competed with Nicolas Vuillos
Yeah, yeah.
In the Peugeot Super 2000 back in my IRC days, and he was really rapid. He actually got a factory seat with Peugeot on a couple of rallies. And I know Nico well, and I think, as Bratton says, there's something about mountain bike, something about mountain biking where you're having to read the grip. You never know, a stone could be out of place, it could be a stone upturned. You're trying to read the grip. It's high speed between the trees. There's so many similarities. Obviously, it's a bike and a car, but I've seen it before where guys from the mountain bike world, you know, they excel in rallying, you know, and it's not even their first sport. Like, Bratton's probably a late starter. I don't know, what age did you start rallying?
I started when I was like 18 or 19, so not like super late, but I didn't immerse myself in it because I had another career. I mean, I still do, but it was like at that point I didn't have, you know, whatever little bit of extra funds I had that was getting put into rally, but it would be like one or two events a year for the first few years. I wasn't like always in the car and just being like, you know, getting the experience fast. It was kind of like a slow burn, and then I did get to a point where it was like, then I was finally doing like a whole championship, and I'd get to do seven or eight events a year, and that's where I felt like my progression went.
Yeah, you need to be doing lots of rallies, but no, it's impressive. And what Bratton's doing in the US Championship is incredible, you know. I think you can even see now on the last couple of events I watched, you know, Travis has come back and he's been struggling a bit, but I think Bratton's at that age where he just keeps progressing all the time, you know, so... but no, it's quite clear. Mountain bike guys definitely have something. I certainly don't have the skill on a mountain bike that he has in a rally car. It doesn't work vice versa. I enjoy mountain biking and I enjoy going downhill, but some of the World Cup downhill tracks in Andorra, I have to put the bike over my shoulder and carry it down. I have to confess that.
It was interesting, you know, Chris. You were just talking earlier. You and I have talked a lot about bikes, about road racing at home, TT and what have you. And one thing that really intrigued me, that you said, you know, there's TT and there's mountain bike downhill that are on a par of insanity almost, isn't it? And you live in Andorra, so you've ridden some of the downhill tracks.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to live there. I live on the same face of the mountain that the World Cup downhill track is on. So it's the World Cup downhill track used to pass within 200 metres of my house. So. But when the show comes to town for the World Cup downhill in Andorra, tens of thousands of spectators, you see the best guys in the world. And I've actually been lucky enough because a lot of the top guys, Loic, Brunei, Greg Minnaar, they all live in Andorra. And I'm lucky enough to be good friends with them. But to watch the World Cup circus come to town and what those guys do between the trees is insane, you know. And like I said, for me, Isle of Man TT on a motorbike is the biggest sport in the world that I have respect for, as a guy's putting their everything on the line between the trees. Next is what these guys do on a mountain bike, because they don't have the protection, you don't have a roll cage, and the speeds and the jumps they're doing between trees is frightening. Yes, we do it in a rally car, but you have a bit of a get-out card which works 99.9% of the time as a roll cage, you know, but these guys don't, and that's the difference.
You look at suspension technology on mountain bikes. I mean, it's come on such a long way. Okay, it's still a long way behind cars, but there is that sort of parallel, isn't it, between the tech?
Yeah, I mean, at mountain bike technology, you know, bikes and equipment in the last, I mean, I keep saying 5 years, it's probably been 10 years now, but it's like the rate that it's improving is so wild. Like, the suspension has really come a long way, and that is a big aspect, as well as, you know, there's been this change in wheel sizes, but with that, it's really like the geometry and the kinematics of the bikes have this like improved so much to where it's unbelievable. Like, you can carry so much more speed, and like the terrain could be so much rougher, and it's just like, being a rider, it's like, it's a lot less effort than it used to be. The bikes, you were, you know, similar to kind of like these early age cars we're driving, like, it just, they work. Like, you can make them work, but they're not like, there's no relaxing in the car or the bike, you know?
It's funny you mentioned that, because now they run like a 29 front and a 27 and a half
rear. The mullet, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That would be like a mullet setup. You could go full 29, but I started, it was 26-inch wheels.
Well, my old bike that I got off Specialized back in the day was, the Demo 8 was a 26-26. Yep. And then I rented one day a mullet bike with bigger front wheel, and it just was so different.
Really?
And I end up selling my Specialized bike. And
that much of a difference?
Yeah, I felt the difference, and I know nothing about bikes. Yeah. But
if you're riding an Andorra and you've got, like, you know, the terrain's quite gnarly, it's, like, quite rough, and, like, the bigger wheel just rolls over everything. But what comes with that is the speed. Like, the bike is just, because it's rolling over everything, you just gain speed everywhere. So there, yeah, and then to take it back to World Cup downhill, like, the speed those boys are going, boys and girls, is just, like, it's
mind-blowing.
It's so much faster than it used to be, also because of the equipment and the suspension technology, and, like, it's almost like Formula One, like, preparation now. But, like, yeah, the bikes are unbelievable.
Yeah.
Have you done much downhill?
I grew up racing cross-country and four-cross, and I did a little bit of downhill, just, like, some fun stuff. When I got to, like, the transition of, like, racing and then going into this, like, kind of free-ride, slope-style direction, I'd kind of burnt myself out of racing. And it sounds weird because I was so young, but I'd started when I was really young. My brother was a professional cross-country road racer. He did a bunch of stuff and a lot of international things. And so, like, from a young age, like, I think, like, 6 years old, I started to kind of get into it. And then by nine, I was, like, doing, like, the whole, like, you know, regional championship. And then it was, like, national championship and more, like, stuff outside the box. But
the age of nine.
Yeah. So it was like 6 years in, I'm like 5 or 6 years in, I'm sort of, like, already getting burnt on it as, like, a kid. And then there was so many other disciplines in mountain biking that I just never got to experience, because time and any, like, if I needed a new bike, it was always a race bike. And then when I got, like, finally got, like, a jump bike or a downhill bike, it was kind of like, well, it's like, this opened up my world to, like, all this other stuff I haven't really got to, like, dig into. So by that time, where I, like, had a downhill bike, I could go race downhills. I was already over racing. I didn't want to do it anymore. I was just like, I'm going to go over here and do this.
So just go and do backflips or 40-foot gap jumps or something. Yeah.
9 years old, Chris, is not a bad age to start. There's a certain 9-year-old Meek that's competing and doing pretty well.
Yeah. My two young girls now are racing, skiing. They're only 8 and 9 years of age, but they've been skiing since they're three. So they're part of the race club in Andorra. Part of the school curriculum there in the winter time is one day a week you have to be in the mountain. Then there are the race club Saturday and Sunday, and then a Wednesday night after school they have slalom practice under floodlight. So 4 days a week they're in the mountain.
It's a great age though, isn't it? You know, you're fearless and
yeah. So I cannot keep up with them now, honestly. I'm not a great skier, but I can't keep up, and she's 9 years of age and she's just won the Andorran school championships. So yeah, let's see where that goes. I know nothing about skiing. But I have my 9-year-old daughter coming home and tell me I put the wrong wax on the skis, so I need a different type of wax for the different conditions. But anyway, it's good for them, you know. Good discipline.
It absolutely is. But one thing I'd wanted to ask, Chris referenced it there, you know, the jumping off the cliffs and everything, Red Bull Rampage that you do. What's the feeling like when you're about to start that run at the top of the cliff? Does it compare with anything?
The hairs in my hand are going up even thinking about it.
It's nuts, isn't it? But does it compare in any way to starting a stage? You know, maybe a really gnarly stage in Oregon. There's some really tricky ones.
Honestly, like, Rampage is, it's the lead up to me is, like, the stressful kind of, like, scary bit. I feel like when I'm at the top for, like, my run, you know, you're, like, within a few minutes of dropping. Like, I'm really nervous, but I'm not really scared at all.
Really?
And then I'm not really even thinking about anything. I'm kind of just like, it's like you almost just like zone out completely. And you're just kind of like, you have this like bit of anxious, nervous feeling of like, I just like, can I just go? Like, just like, I know I've prepared already. We've ridden everything. Like, we've done the build, done the whole thing. I just get me down the hill is like basically the feeling. In the rally car, maybe there's been the odd times or like obviously like when Ken and I had a serious battle going on in 22 at a few of the events where it was like this is the stage that's going to determine things, and it was kind of like a checkers or wreckers situation. Like, you start the stage being like, okay, like that bit of a feeling, like, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
But not really scared, not really nervous so much. Yeah, I don't know, it's all preparation, right? Like, you show up to the rally, once you've done your pace notes, you've done your homework, and you get in the car, your helmet's on, you don't really think of anything else. You're just ready to go.
It just resonates a bit. I remember Finland, Rally Finland.
Onanpoja,
but not even Onanpoja. It's just going to the first stage Friday morning. You've done your test. You've done your recce. You've done all the work. And all the talking and stuff
before and the day leading up to it, you just want that all out of the way. You just want to get to the start line and go, you know.
Were you generally, you never scared, I'm not sure if you're scared, but would you be more anxious in Finland just because of the speed?
I don't think I was ever scared sitting on a start line of our stage. I was never scared because you believe in what you can do, but there's a level of anticipation, that sort of bit of nervousness. And for sure, events like Finland, it just sort of ratchets up that a little bit more because it's the Finnish Grand Prix. It's the most iconic rally in the world. And the speeds are incredible there, so you really have to be zoned in. So it is, there's a, just that heightened level of anxiety, but I wouldn't say scared, no.
How you sit there, Chris Meek, and modestly talk about it. You're the winner of the fastest ever Rally Finland, and you're the... Nobody has won a WRC round at a higher average speed than you. You're still the quickest man in WRC.
It's true. But since I'd done the rally, the route has never been the same. And they've put in these anti-cut devices. I have no doubt in the current Rally 1 cars, if they'd done the same route to the same road, they would eclipse the fastest speed, no question. So it's, yes, it's a record, but... I think the nature of the rally, trying to keep the average speeds down now, they've curtailed a bit the roads, so...
But it's been quick Polands and you know, Latvia will be quick. This year has been Estonia. But
so I see this year they're going back to do the 33K on Umpoya.
Yeah.
The normal way or the reverse way?
Not. So you'll come past the yellow house on the left.
Okay, so the normal way. When I done it, was the first time in 27 years that I ran it reverse.
Yeah, so you do the yellow house was a sort of drop-off, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, but anyway... Yeah.
You have to come to Finland.
It looks amazing. And I've watched on a Poya stage like a bunch of times. It is just like, unbelievable.
From what I've so watched good. A few onboards of Hiro Otago, and it's not that different. Finland's probably a bit more technical, a bit more sharper elevation.
Yeah, but quite wide in places like Finland.
Quite wide, but Finland can go into narrow roads, softer roads.
The newer versions of the rally seem to get more technical.
Yes. Yeah, they went into, they cut off into the real narrow sections to bring the average speed down and stuff. But the here, when I watched some of Hayden's onboards, which I wish I hadn't have done, because it just looks insane. And he's so perfect lines everywhere he's done. He obviously knows the road so well, but it was impressive to watch. But here's like a tamer Finland, but as fast and as challenging, but it just hasn't that real technical jumps, big, massive jumps you do in Finland. But, yeah, the roads are quite similar here, but just everything's a little less aggressive.
Just to whiz back momentarily to Rampage and the difference, but one thing, obviously, with competing and rallying, you've got a co-driver next to you telling you, how difficult was it to remember everything when you were at Rampage? Because you pick out your route and everything, and... Was that element of having a co-driver talking to you now, is that quite different when you're used to just doing your own thing on a bike?
I think notes and co-driver and the whole, all that was like when I started rallying, it was hard to wrap my head around because it was just, like if someone was yelling at me while I was riding my bike, it would just throw me off. Like I would be like, shut up, go away, you know? But in a rally car now, it's like I can't get in the car. It's weird when you don't have someone calling notes. Like it's a weird sensation. Like even today, like spin a couple laps, it's me and Keaton, and then we do some meteor rides, and you're like, I don't remember the road at all. Until you set off, and you're like, oh, I know what I'm doing, but it is a weird, like how much you rely on the pace notes and listening to the co-driver. It's strange, but the Rampage is different because we're covering so much less ground.
What's a run at Rampage?
It's like 45 seconds, probably. Maybe a minute, depending on like how direct your line is or if you have like a traverse of any sort.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's typically like maybe 6 to 10 features in your run with some like kind of connecting trail. But you've built it all yourself. You've been there 9 days already. You're like, you know it like the back of your hand. Like, there'll be little rock stacks on the lip to just like show you exactly where to go and everything. So, like, it's like... You've kind of got your recce's already placed, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is quite remarkable. There's just a few questions that I'd kind of prepared. Chris, we'll start with you. Who's had the biggest influence on your career?
I think it goes to that question. Everyone knows my association with Colin McRae back in the day. Colin was my idol when I was a kid growing up. funny, we were chatting about it the other day. I remember, I think it was it Donegal Rally or was it Circuit of Ireland Rally, was on the same time that Colin won his first ever rally in New Zealand, was first ever World Rally, 1993.
That's right, because Jimmy was at home. Because Alex...
Jimmy was on the Circuit of Ireland, and I was there in a chase car with my dad. He was supporting Bertie Fisher. And I remember coming off the end of a stage and everybody was cheering and dancing up the road because Colin had won Rally New Zealand. And that was 1993. So I was only 14 at that time. So, yeah. I never knew then that I would even drive a rally car. I never dreamed I would drive it in the World Championship, let alone win World Rallies. But it was only for one reason why Colin McRae chose to get behind my career when I was younger, and he put the foundations in place for me to move from National Championship into the World Championship. And without that stepping stone and his guidance, he never sat in a rally car with me and told me what to do, but he provided the footsteps and the financial backing for me to break through the World Championship. So that's the hardest steps to take as a driver. And without that opportunity, I wouldn't have been where I've been and wouldn't have had the career I had. So I owe everything to Colin. It's very straightforward for me to answer that question. Colin McRae certainly was the biggest influence in my career. You know?
Bikes or cars, but top Colin McRae, if you can.
Hard to do, but I'd have a hard time really pinpointing one person. And I feel like there will continue to be people throughout, you know, this endeavor and journey and motorsports that will help me out immensely. But it definitely started with Pat Richard. Early on, just through a familiar connection we had. Basically, I rolled into his shop. It was the first time I'd ever been in like a rally shop in my life, motorsport shop for that matter. And I was passionate about rally already. I'd watched it. I'd bought a Subaru because I wanted to go rally, and it was fun on the forestry roads near my house. But it wasn't a rally car. So I went in there. A buddy of mine's like, you should just go check out his shop, meet Pat. You know, he's Canadian Subaru rally driver. And as I walked in, literally that day, he took my stock car and gave me a race-ready rally car. So it needed some preparation, but he's like, he just took the keys and he's like, I'll hand you a brand new, ready to go. It's almost what I'm driving here in Otago, but it was an 02 Bug Eye production spec, like bone stock, just had, you know, skid plates, wheels, tires, some suspension, but get ready to race. So I was like, that was amazing. And then, so he built this car over like the matter of like 6 months. And then in that time, one of my really good friends, another professional mountain biker, lived right across from the chalet. And one of my sponsors, there's someone within the PR department that loved rally, loved motorsports. And it was Crankworks and it's, you know, big mountain bike festival. And he's like, he basically like pulled me away from practice. He's like, you got to come with me. He's like, We're going to go over here for 20 minutes. And he took me to the chalet and I'm like, I know where I am. My buddy lives like right there. And they're like, yeah, but like this guy lives here. And I was like, yeah, here he's like into cars or something. And so he takes me upstairs and there's PWRC World Championship Trophy, a bunch of like British National Rally Championship trophies. And I was like, so it was Martin Rowe.
Yeah.
And then whatever.
Skid.
Yeah, exactly. And so we got chatting and he was like so stoked that I was into rally. Gave me a bunch of like old in-car from like British Rally Championship, like in the McGann and stuff. And then he's like, the day you get your car, he's like, we're going to go rally. I'm like, sure, you know, like not going to question that. And so the very first day I ever sat in a rally car was with Martin Rowe. And he's always been really helpful. Like anything I've needed, any questions and just kind of guiding me the best he can, or just he's just genuinely interested and wants to, you know, he's always wanted to see the best for me, I believe. So that's been really cool. And then, I mean, to go another step further in that kind of my rally endeavors is, when Pat kind of moved out of his seat in the Canadian Rally Championship, he brought in Antoine Lestage, who I was familiar with already. But with him there and I was within kind of Pat's team racing, Antoine had helped me a lot, and he still does. He's like, he hits me up every rally, and he's just always like, you know, really intuitive and curious how things are going, and he's come to some tests and things like that. So another driver is just like, he's an amazing driver. He's more like my style of driving, where he's really meticulous and he likes to break down things on the road a lot. And so he's been awesome. And then to go to the last step, you know, my journey so far has been Travis. Just really, I feel like I wouldn't be with Subaru Motorsports USA if it wasn't for Travis. I think he was the one that kind of pushed me through as like an option at the team. And just, you know, from like day one, just being like an open book of like, he's like, he wanted me to get up to speed so that he had like competition and he could improve himself. Like if he could learn something off me, like where maybe I find some time on a stage and he's like, hey, now I know I can go faster there. Like that was like, he was really clever in that. You see, he is really clever in that sense of where like, if he leveled up his teammates' competition, it leveled up his competition, and then we could be like the dominant team. And
yeah, I've seen Travis work when I done the races in Nitro. Yeah. Nitro Rallycross. You know, I've been a fanboy of Travis all my life, and I met him a few times.
He's your kind of guy, isn't he?
But I really got to know him during the Nitro Rallycross. But like you say, for me, Travis is this aura and this whole thing around that he's a superstar. You know, does these insane stuff, tricks and motorbikes, and the first ever guy to do a backflip or a double backflip and jumps out of airplanes with no parachutes. But how meticulous he works behind the scenes, and he's clever guy. So don't let the Aurora fool you. The guy works really hard at it, and he's a big inspiration of mine too, you know. But like Brandon says, when I went to the Nitro Rallycross, he really done everything he could to help me out on anything I needed, you know. So yeah, he was an influence in my career a little bit as well, you know.
Did you know Martin?
Yeah, I done my second ever rally. Martin Rowe was still competing British Championship. The Rally of Wirral.
Oh, yeah. In Formula Mouth. Rally or whatever.
Yeah, 2001. Foot and mouth disease was first round of the Peugeot 106 Cup. And Martin Rowe was a factory Peugeot driver. Renault? Peugeot?
Maybe he was Peugeot, then he was Renault. With Robbie Head.
Yeah,
I
forget which car. So, yeah, I done my first ever rally with Martin.
He's a good guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
He retired not long after that, and then he married and he moved to Whistler. Yep. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's still in Whistler, so yeah. I'll drop by his place every once in a while. I'll have a cup of tea and just shoot the.
Yeah, he still does some instructing, doesn't he? At Tuttle's.
He does. Yeah, lots of driving instructing. He does stunt driving. He's done all sorts of like kind of commercial like tire and vehicle testing. Like okay. He's still very much immersed in it. And I've actually. Through some of like my film stuff, just like production company, we've hired him as like a stunt driver for things in the past. So yeah, it's pretty fun to have him around.
Yeah, there's a going back to British Championship. There's a reunion. Donna Kelly, has he been in touch?
No, coming? I was at Donna's museum about 6 months ago, and I was chatting to him after it, and he was telling me he's trying to do a reunion of all the.
Formula 2.
Formula 2 days of British Championship. So I wasn't in the Formula 2 days because I wasn't in the...
But you still got to come.
Yeah.
It'd be some proper weekend, that.
There would be a heavy weekend, I'd say. You need to come well prepared.
You're allowed to transport yourself to one era in the WRC, one generation of cars. So it could be Group B, Group 4, Group A. Well, which era and which car?
More familiar than me.
Keep feeling like I was born in the wrong era. Probably my style and my approach probably suited more the, I would say, 90s, late 90s, mid to late 90s for me. When Collinstein, when I went from Group A to the World Rally Car scene, that 96, 97, 98, and that transition, that for me was a magical time at WRC. I don't know if it was just my age that I was at. I was a teenager then. Went to watch my first ever world rally was Rally Catalunya, I think 1997. But for me then, the atmosphere about the rallies was incredible. The championship was on its way up. They got the rules right. There was 7 factory teams, 21 factory cars. You know, that's when it was proper. And now it's WRC. Well, we don't want to get into that can of worms of everyone's discussing the WRC at the moment. But when you have 6 to 7 cars on the start line, and at the end, and our five cars in the top four or five. And I look back then, that was proper back 21 factory cars. They got the recipe right at that era. You know, and now it needs a refresh, but everyone's fighting over which direction it goes. But no, for me, mid to late 90s.
We were a little bit down the road from that, but you did get a shot in Rally Ireland in an Impreza World Rally car. Would that have been your... In those old 2 litre cars, you only drove that?
I started doing a first ever World Rally car I drove was 2007, I believe. I'd done a few rallies in Ireland, the Circuit of Ireland, Killarney.
Was that a yellow Pirelli car?
Yes, I drove the Ulster Rally in the yellow Pirelli car. The rest of them was a Kenny McKinstry S11. So, but those cars advanced so much even from the late 90s cars. Those cars had fully active diffs. They were still nice to drive, but I think I'd have preferred a bit more. The Group A start of the World Rally Car era, they were a lot more manually operated and, you know, a lot less driver aids on them, shall we say, you know. So, that era I would have loved to have been about. Everyone would have loved to have been about in the Group B era. But for me personally, when the technology started to ramp up and everything started to get better, I preferred that era. You know, I think in the Group B, people remembered because it was 500-600 horsepower, but they had no suspension, no brakes, no steering worth talking about. They probably weren't fascinating to drive through an Onampoya like a current World Rally car is. So
it was point and squirt, wasn't
it? Yes, it was point and squirt to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's too sorry.
Over to you.
I don't know. It's that's a tough one. I mean, good point, obviously, about the manufacturers. Like, I've never got to experience the kind of Group A cars so much. But I would say, like, for me, the early 2000 era was just really spectacular to watch. And there was still, like, a big manufacturer present at the time. And each manufacturer had, you know, 2-3 drivers. And it seemed like that's when, like, things started to become a bit more like serious, but like it hadn't reached this point of where everything was like a formula yet. Like people were still figuring it out, and there was lots of things moving within the sport, and the cars were advancing, but there was no, like, you know, there was so much to learn still, even though it looked very proper.
Yeah.
But the cars were spectacular to watch. There was, you know, so much action, and the boys were just always sending it. Like there was just a crazy era.
Yeah,
it absolutely was. I think. The thing, you know, everybody becomes, you know, obsessed with the Group B because it was so emotive and, you know, there were such tragic times as well as everything else. But both of you would have taken seconds a mile out of those cars. And I remember having this conversation with you that the speed, it's the suspension, isn't it, that's changed so much and brought the speed up.
Suspension and aero and brakes. And you can only drive a powerful car fast if you have good brakes. You know, so, and the brakes have improved so much, and everything's just went. And even I see it now doing all the development work with Skoda and the R5. Like, we go to test on stages, and for me, it's as fast as when I started in the WRC in a 2013 World Rally car. The speeds of the current R5s are probably similar, if not far away. So, yeah, obviously, the Rally 1 cars now have moved on again, but yeah. That's just progression. Technology is always just progresses all the time, you know.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. So now you've got 1 gallon of fuel left in the whole wide world. Where are you going to put it? Where are you going to drive? What's that? What's that one special bit of road that I know I've kind of gone?
You only allowed 1 gallon?
Well, no, all right.
I don't think 1 gallon would take me through on Onampoya.
Where are we in?
No, it would be Onampoya for you, though.
My last fill of a tank?
Yeah.
Onampoya.
What is it? I mean, I've driven that road a good few times, obviously very slowly. It is, you know, there's some different bits to it, isn't it? You get to the junction and you turn left and it changes there. You've come down the steps and then Cacaristo gets narrow. It's just the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's such an iconic stage. I remember watching it like in the 80s when I was 6-7 years of age. I remember watching Group B stuff, doing all the finish stages, but like after you're in the world championship scene for a few years and you've wrecked it a few times, you've done it quite a few times, everybody knows every inch of every stage, but especially Onampoya. So to make a difference in there is always difficult because everyone knows it so well, but it's such a special place. You have to get your lines millimeter perfect everywhere because you're taking off in sixth gear
190 kph, and if you take off 6 inches of line, you're landing a meter and a half. 50 meters up the road, you're landing a meter and a half in the ditch if you don't get your takeoff speed right, you know. So it's threading that eye of a needle at the speed you do it. It just makes it so special, hence.
I probably the speed I was driving in the rental car, I could never figure out the famous Sordo and Gardemeister rock on the left. Would that have been a jump way back that they just got wrong? How would you get that
the
one?
I remember speaking to Juha the year I won Finland was 2016. He turned up to my test, and I was Juha Kankinen, and I was chatting to him, and he said the rally's changed so much because over the years, as it snows in the winter times and the snowplow takes the snow away, it scrapes a little bit off the crest. So back in the days, it used to be a lot more aggressive on the lips of the jumps, and every year they just get a little bit smoother. So couple that with the suspension technology improving all the time. Now, there's a few jumps in it, and you need to be very careful because the car, even if it goes light, you don't get that feedback off the steering. But, it's probably become less aggressive, the road, over the years.
But Yellow House is still... Is that flat? Is that absolutely flat out?
No, you need to lift and go back on the throttle to get the right trajectory off the jump, because if you just go flat out, you'll... land and do a Richard Burns and land, and he done the oil filter, I think, on the front.
Yeah, and crush the turbo pipe as well, yeah.
So, no, you have to do a little dab, but it's flat out. The year I done it the opposite way was more scary because it's a drop jump.
And you look like you fly straight
and
into
you're
the
coming on about a K and a half before it, you're on the rev limiter. So you're coming out of it on the rev limiter as a drop jump into...
Wow.
Anyway, it's good.
So your last fill of gas, where are you going with it?
There's a stage in the Canadian Rally Championship. There's a rally called Rally de Fee. And there's one stage in there. It's a really long stage. It's like 35 kilometers typically. But there's a piece of it, and the road's called Elmet. And it's unbelievable. It's similar to what Chris is explaining with Finland, but the surface is really sandy, and it's like... there's big bushes, and you're kind of like you're clipping the bushes, and you can jump to the outsides of a lot of things. But it's like you never really know how deep you can go into everything. But I had done the rally in a Group N car, basically, like early on, you know, maybe 2016 or something like that. And then we'd gone back, and we did it. We tested there the new 23R Subaru. And it was just driving that car on that road was so much fun. Like that was that's the most fun I've had in a car like to this day. And so if we ever got the chance to go back and do that again, I would.
Did 100%. You want to go? Did you ask to test?
It was my request to go do these roads, not just that road in particular, but that was one road was like we really wanted like something that was going to test the car, like because the road develops a lot. It's sandy and it gets rutted, and then the rocks come up, and there's a lot of jumps, and like there's a lot of angle to the car, like when you're driving, like you're coming over the jumps and the car's always sideways, or like, you know, you're like stuffing it into the ruts, and there's a lot of like steering input. And so it was just a good place to like really test the durability of the car and what the performance would be like. And we went there, and it was unbelievable. Yeah,
so you need to go to Annapurna, and I need to go to Canada.
100%. Absolutely. Does it, both of you, the feeling of the car in the air jumping, is that something special, or is it heart in the mouth moment?
Well, I had this conversation last week because my young kid, 9-year-old girl, she's coming off jumps the height of the ceiling, so with skis on, and I wouldn't even dare to do it. So when I leave the ground on a set of skis, I feel awkward. When I leave the ground on a bicycle, I feel awkward. When I leave the ground on a car, I feel completely at ease.
Really?
Yeah, so for me, jumping in a car is no problem, but what these wackos do on a bicycle, I can't fathom, you know. You can obviously ski.
Yeah, I grew up in Whistler, so I grew up skiing.
You can jump easily on skis?
Yeah.
So I can't do that. I'm not comfortable when I leave the ground. I don't know what to do.
But, I mean, for me, like, jumping a car and jumping a bike, it's like, it's the same feeling. If I'm going too big, then that's the only time I'm, like, you know, you have that hard mouth moment. But normally, I'm like, jumping the car is, like, it feels so chill. And it's, like, the cars are so good now. They're, like, they land and it's smooth. And
And it's just quiet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like exactly. Everything goes like calm for a second. Yeah. But I really like the when you're jumping the car, but there's like more dynamicness to it. Like if you're sideways or there's input or you're landing and you know there's like something like a hook to catch. Or it's like that's when like rally gets so good.
Yeah, just a straight, flat jump.
It doesn't do anything. It's nothing
not
for me.
It's not that exciting. You need a bit of landing into a corner. On how deep you can land.
You're using the brakes in the air a little, or like something, you know, just to like place yourself. And yeah.
And I mean, those beaches are the iconic ones, aren't they? The sideways, over the jump. It's pretty special. Well, it's pretty much time to wrap it up now. I've just got one last question to say. Otago, we're here, we're in Dunedin. You're probably going to get a bit of a pass on this one. You've only been here 48 hours, but tell me, both of you, what's the best thing so far that you've seen of Otago?
They do a very good Guinness. And I never drink Guinness outside of Ireland.
But they do quite
this
well
one
here.
Was really, really good. So, the Guinness was good.
And it's Guinness. Well, I was going to say it's Guinness with a view, but the view in Ireland's always pretty good as well. So
you can see the view if it's not down the rain. But yeah,
we might have a bit of an issue with the rain here in the next few days. But yeah, come to Dunedin for the Guinness, or come to Dunedin for...
I mean, everyone's been so welcoming so far. Like we did a test today, and it got pretty busy at one point. A lot of people were, you know, shaking down the cars, but everyone was just like so stoked to see like me and Chris and wanted to talk about the cars and telling us about the road, just giving us some like local knowledge. So obviously can't, you know, appreciate that enough. Obviously they welcomed us here and found us some cars. So It's been great. I'm hoping to see. I've been to Dunedin before, but I'm hoping to see some other parts of it. Recce's going to be a long day, and I'm assuming we'll cover a lot of ground with the way, you know, no repeat stages and things like that. But yeah, I mean,
I think you need to ask that question again after the weekend.
Yes. Yeah. When you've seen a bit of the country, we'll come back to that. But it's been a pleasure. It's great to be down here with you boys, and thank you very much for joining us on Spin the Rally Pod. Enjoy it, and we might do some more of these vodcasts or podcasts if you're listening. But yeah, thank you very much and have a good one.
Cheers.
Thanks. Thank you.